Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to today's USPP conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must also advise you that the conference is being recorded today, Tuesday, the 19th of March, 2019. I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Martin. Thank you. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. Here, Martin Schuttevaar on the Wascale side here with Hans Kamps, our CFO, Frank Rousseau, also familiar to you all, and Carl Heinz. Welcome, as the operator said, for our 2018 call for all USPP participants. I hope everyone has received a digital copy of the presentation, which we will be running through. Hans will take us through that.
Yeah.
Following the call, we'll go into Q&A mode. And just for the record, the call is being recorded. We will circulate a redial URL to all participants in the next day or two, so you can all add that either to your archives or listen back. Before I hand over to Hans, just a quick note. This will be, for many things we're saying to Hans, this is the last time. Hans will be stepping down as CFO, as I suspect everyone realizes, at the next AGM in May. Carla von Noort, who is his successor internal candidate, been with the group also for more than 10 years, circulated through the various divisions, is unfortunately unable to join us today, but will be listening back to the call as well. And in the next call in August, we will be here with Carlo. But other than that, Hans, thank you, and over to you.
Okay, thank you, Martijn, and good morning to everybody. Thank you for participating in this call, and we'll do it as usual, as Martijn says. First of all, I'll go through the presentation as you probably have it in front of you. And I'll start off with the slide number 3 with the key figures for 2018 compared to 2017. Headlines, revenues are up almost 10%, and even if we correct that for currency differences and for deconsolidations and consolidations, which were very few in 2018, we're having about the same increase, about 9%. Order book, we had a very good flow into the order book in 2018. I'll discuss it in a bit more details when I discuss the various segments. However, EBITDA is substantially down versus 2017, as expected, and as you will remember from previous calls. We have anticipated already for a while the effects of the decreasing business in oil and gas. As you know, we are late cyclical, and 2018 is really the year where we have felt the full brunt of the worsened conditions in our markets of the last couple of years. Results joint ventures also down somewhat, in particular in the towage joint ventures. We had some recent developments there, but I'll be discussing that later on in the presentation. As a result of the declining EBITDA, the operating result is also down, and that is before a rather substantial amount in extraordinary charges. You may remember from the first half year, we had a substantial number in impairment charges on equipment in the heavy marine transport segment of the business, the remaining goodwill of offshore and some towage joint ventures. We have taken another impairment on towage joint ventures, and again I'll be discussing that later on in the presentation. But in total, we have had extraordinary charges of almost 520 million last year, but 95% of that is non-cash accounting impairments. But that brings us to a negative EBIT after these extraordinary charges of minus 400 last year. But a net operating profit corrected for these extraordinary charges, again, for the vast majority non-cash impairment charges, of 83 million versus the 150 of last year. Again, a full reflection of the situation in most of our markets. Dividend, we're proposing to the AGM in May a dividend of 50 cents per share, half of what we have offered in the last two or three years. Be it that this time we will do a full cash dividend, so other than in the last so many years, not a choice dividend up to the shareholders to elect for cash or for shares. We'll do now only cash dividend. 50 cent per share means 80% payout of the 83 million corrected operating net profit for the year, or an amount in cash of 67 million euros. That being said, I'll go on to slide 4. Just a summary of the or an overview of the covenants. Still a very solid balance sheet. Relatively modest number of net debt at the end of 2017, bringing us under the definitions as used in our documentation with you and with the banks, a net debt to EBITDA ratio of 0.7, so well below the three covenant, and an interest cover ratio of 24. So I'd say nothing for you to worry about. Slide 5, just a split up of revenues by region for your information. I don't think anything really worth mentioning here in this call. Order book, I mentioned it already. Order book has gone up within the dredging and inland infra division as well as within offshore energy. Within dredging, that increase is primarily due to two large orders that we were awarded in the first half year, and that I discussed in the half year call. Two important jobs in Singapore, be it of a relatively long duration. Offshore energy, also an increase in the order book. There, in particular, we had a very strong order inflow in the fourth quarter, in particular in the area of renewables, and then more specifically in the power cable installation, power cables for the for offshore wind parks, the previous VBMS joint venture that we acquired full ownership of in 2016. And towage and salvage, as you may remember from previous calls, we never have a substantial order book there, similar level as in 2017, but relatively small. Then going on to slide 8, to the overview of revenue and operating result by segment. Dredging inland infra, revenue up. As we will see in a minute, utilization was, considering the current market circumstances, relatively good. So higher revenues and a stable EBIT margin. That cannot be said for offshore energy. Revenues there were up somewhat, in particular due to the acquisition in the second half of 2017 of Gardline, and a relatively good activity level in the contracting activities within offshore energy, but due to the lower level of activities in the services segment of offshore energy, particularly the heavy marine transport activities, relatively modest increase in revenue, but a result that is just slightly positive. But as some of you may remember from the first half year, at least it has been more substantially positive in the second half of the year, because in the first half of the year we had a loss within offshore energy. Towage and salvage relatively stable, compared to 2017, and the non-allocated income and expenses also stable compared to last year. I'll continue then on slide nine with dredging and inland infra. And maybe first slide number 10, where you see the summary of the utilization of the two most important categories of equipment within the dredging sector, with the remark, I think I made it before, that hoppers are substantially more important than cutters. The ratio in cash flow terms between the hoppers and the cutters is around 6 to 1. So far more relevant is the utilization of the hoppers, which has been slightly better than 2017. And I think considering the current circumstances in the dredging market, they are rather good. In our estimate, the average for the industry is around 30 weeks. We are substantially ahead of that with 36 weeks. Cutters is substantially lower than that, be it slightly bigger than in 2017. But as I said, it is a far less important category, and very important in this category is the Helios, the large cutter that we took into operation mid of 2017. She has been employed quite rather well, running a utilization of around 30 weeks last year. So all in all, satisfactory utilization of the equipment, in line with the higher revenue, a higher EBITDA, and a higher operating result. The Dutch inland infra activities, again, also the second half of the year and the total year has contributed positively to that result. We had a solid contribution from Dutch inland infra activities. And the order book, as I mentioned, is substantially up, in particular due to the large two projects in Singapore. Then going on to slide 11, offshore energy. As I already mentioned, revenue up somewhat compared to last year. Positive contribution there from Gardline. We had in 2018 a full year contribution of Gardline, the survey company in the UK, mainly active on the North Sea that we acquired in August of 2017. So we had a full year contribution in 2018 versus only less than half a year in 2017. But I would almost say more important than that is we had a very good first full year of Gardline with utilization up, some early signs, I think, of some improvement in the oil and gas sector, but also a sign of the good activity levels with respect to renewables to be expected for the foreseeable future. A lot going on, resulting in a higher utilization and also in substantially better pricing. So we had a much better than expected, very solid contribution by Gardline. Within the services sector, and the services sector is primarily the heavy marine transport activities, the previous dockwise activities. As I mentioned it before, we have now almost completely run down the old order book with projects originated 4 or 5 years ago at very good pricing. We are now almost completely dependent on the spot market. As you remember from the first half-year call, we are in the process of taking out of operation, let's say, the lower half of the fleet of dockwise, that part that in the first half of 2018 we noted that we went as low as not even generating a positive cash flow anymore with these vessels. They are taken out of operation. That has had a positive impact on the results in the second half of the year. but at the same time, with the upper half of the fleet, we're now in the position 2018 that will also apply to 2019. We are in the process of slowly starting our building order book again for the longer term 2020, but mainly 2021-22 forward. We'll have to bridge the period 2018-2019 primarily by spot market. And also in the services segment, we have the diving activities, the subsea services activities. We have started with two new vessels that we acquired, one ownership, one in, on a charter from Harkent. They have not yet positively contributed to the result in 2018. We're building up the market position there in a still weak market, and that in total, these developments in services have been the prime reasons for the result of offshore energy going down in 2018. The contracting side has done much better. Seabed intervention, which is the rock protection of pipelines, landfalls, landfall projects like TurkStream, like the project Nord Stream, you may be well aware of. We're working on that project. We have completed TurkStream. They have contributed well to the results in 2018. Offshore wind, we have had somewhat of a disappointing, certainly second half of the year with some operational issues on a couple of our projects. Partly weather related, and for some other reasons. But all in all, contracting has contributed substantially positive to the results in 2018. Going on to towage and salvage, revenue there is only for our salvage activities, because all the towage and terminals activities, as you know, we conduct through 50% owned joint ventures, so we do not consolidate those numbers. Salvage has had a relatively busy 2018, with a few substantial salvage jobs in there. One really noteworthy to mention is the container vessel, the Maersk Honam, that has kept us pretty busy last year, that has contributed well together with some other projects, together with the usual settlements of all the projects to the results in 2018. So all in all, a very satisfactory year for salvage. That cannot be said for the towage and terminal joint ventures, and particularly not for the towage joint ventures. Also there, in the second half of the year, we have felt the effects of the increased competition, severe price pressure, in particular coming from the container shipping lines, the consequence of the consolidation on the container shipping sector, bringing the result from the joint ventures down from 26 million in 2017 to 20 million. That also had its consequences, as we will be discussing in a minute, because we are in the process of selling our interest in two most important joint ventures in this towage sector, but I'll spend some words on that in a minute. First of all, slide number 13, where as usual we provide the 100% numbers of all the joint ventures that we are involved in, and this time we have split those numbers between the full numbers for the 100% 100% basis for all the joint ventures that we owned in 2018, but we have also now included a pro forma statement for those joint ventures that we will, at least for the time being, continue with. So we have excluded the two joint ventures that we are divesting, which are our joint venture Sam Smith, the joint venture together with the Sam company from Chile, where we conduct towage operations within Brazil, in Mexico, in Panama, and in Canada. And we intend to sell our share in the Kotech Smith joint venture, the joint venture together with the Kotech company here from the Netherlands, from Rotterdam, where we undertake towage activities in ports in the Netherlands, in Belgium, and in Germany. That means we're going to miss the contribution of those joint ventures as from somewhere in 2019. But you'll be interested to hear that what we'll missing there is a contribution to our EBITDA that was last year, 10 million, 2018, 10 million euros. Less than half of that we're actually getting into cash because the payout of these joint ventures is not exceeding 50%, but will be generating through the sale of our equity stakes in these two joint ventures around 265 million euros in the course of this year. Slide 14, holding and eliminations, stable versus last year, nothing really worthwhile, I think, to mention there. I'll go on to slide 15, the extraordinary charges. As I already mentioned, most of that were the extraordinary charges, were the impairments that we took in the first half of 2018, 137 on equipment within the offshore energy division. The remaining goodwill of 155 of the offshore energy division. So we don't carry any goodwill any longer on our balance sheet for offshore energy. And related to the winding down of the lower part of the fleet of Dock-wise, we took provisions of around 17 million again in the first half year, and this is the only cash element in the extraordinary charges for 2018. Harbor towage, we took 88 million of impairment charges in the first half of the year. We have added to that 112 million of impairment charges in the second half of the years, and most of that is related to the Sam Smith joint venture that I just mentioned, the joint venture conducting the towage operations in the Americas that we will be divesting in 2019. So basically, the book loss that would be generated by this joint venture has been accounted for already in the 2018 numbers. On slide 16, short summary of that transaction, the Sam Smith Towage transaction. So we're selling our 50% stake. Actually, it is two different joint ventures. In one, we own 49%, and the other, we own 50%. We are selling both of these stakes to our partner. They know the business well. They will not be conducting a due diligence. We'll have to go through the merger clearance processes in the Americas. That will take some time in some of these countries, but we don't expect any issues there. So we have a very high level of confidence this transaction will be closed somewhere late second quarter, early third quarter. The pricing enterprise value is $560 million for 100%, so that's around 7.5 times EBITDA. After deducting the net debt that is being carried by these joint ventures, and then for our 50% will receive a cash consideration of $200 million asset expected to close late second quarter. The net result contribution in 2018 was 8.4 million. Dividends were lower than that, so the cash received, the cash contribution was even lower than that. And on page 17, a similar summary of the transaction. We have a letter of intent in place now for the sale of the full joint venture, because also Koter, our partner in the joint venture, will be divesting its stake. So both partners will sell the full operation to Baluda, company from Spain with very extensive tower operations in Europe, in Africa, and other places in the world, at an enterprise value of around 300 million euros, which is a EBITDA multiple of around 8.5 times. The cash consideration for our 50%, so after deducting the net debt of this joint venture, cash contribution is 90 million. This one will close, if everything goes well, after the due diligence by the buyer, after the merger clearance processes, etc., in the second half of the year. The net result contribution of this joint venture for our share last year was 2.1 million. We did not receive any cash dividend from this joint venture. And as I just mentioned, we'll have a cash contribution through the sale of 90 million. Then going on to slide 19, the balance sheet, still strong, as I said before. Balance sheet is, of course, reflecting the consequences of the impairment charges. The joint ventures, obviously, are still on there. They are included in the 606 million under associated companies, including the assets held for sale. Working capital was minus almost 350 million at the end of the year, after the cash outflow in working capital in the first half of the year. We had a cash inflow in working capital in the second half of the year. The net debt position at the end of the year was 131 million, slightly up versus the beginning of the year, much better than mid of the year. But as you remember from the mid-year call and the previous ones, we always have a substantial difference between mid-year numbers, where we are in the mid of the working summer season, where working capital is less negative or higher in a positive sense, and net debt mid of the year is always higher than at the end of the year. Capital expenditure on the next slide number 20, relatively modest capital expenditure last year. Two-thirds of capital expenditure was in the usual smaller items, project-related, auxiliary equipment, small modifications of equipment, the usual dry dockings, and a third of CAPEX was related to new equipment. The most important is the Krios, the sister vessel of the cutter Helios that we are currently building, and we purchased some smaller pieces of equipment in the offshore energy division, etc. Well within our cash flow, as you can see on slide 21. Cash flow here in the classical definition of net results plus depreciation amortization and impairment charges. Summary of the cash inflows and cash outflows on slide number 22. Most of the issues I have already mentioned. All in all, over 2018, we've seen a cash outflow in working capital. As you remember, we had a very substantial cash outflow in working capital in the first half of the year that has partly been compensated by a positive inflow in the second half of the year. But all in all, cash from operating activities has been sufficient, as you can see, with 236 million to cover and the net capital expenditure and the cash portion of the dividend over 2017, and the 17 million that we spent early in 2018 on the share buyback program. Maybe mentioning that word, a share buyback, it is noteworthy to mention that considering the fact that we expect to generate later this year, 2019, around 265 million euros from the divestment of the two joint venture interests that I just mentioned, we intend to spend, I should say, around 100 million of that through a share buyback program that we have just these days started, and that we will carry out for at least the remainder of this year. So 100 million out of the 265 to be expected from the joint ventures is going to be spent on buying back some of our shares. Just maybe one thing to mention, 2019 is the year that we will have to implement IFRS 16. I suppose you're familiar with that. We have to capitalize and recognize as a liability all our lease and rental contracts, or at least those that qualify under IFRS 16 to be capitalized and to be recognized as a liability. We will do so effective from the 1st of January, so we will have no restatement of the 2018 figures. There is not going to be an impact on equity. There is going to be obviously an impact on the liabilities and on the assets. That is estimated to be in the range of 75 to 100 million. It will increase EBITDA with somewhere between 15 to 20 million, and it will have a relatively modest impact, a decrease of less than €1 million on the net profit. But as you no doubt are aware of under our documentation with you, we will calculate the numbers under the covenants as if IFRS 16 were not implemented. We'll do that based on the standards as were applicable as the moment we concluded the documentation for the USPP. Summary of our financing facilities on slide 2024. And then I will conclude with the outlook of 2019. Looking at dredging, considering our order book, considering what's in the pipeline in the market, our current view is volumes and margins should be relatively stable. Offshore energy, as I already mentioned, we have some good projects in our contracting portfolio. Very important one in that is the Nord Stream project. Also, of course, there is some risk that due to the political situation around Nord Stream, we may see a disturbance there in the course of 2019. But at this moment, we're working on the project and making good progress. Services, I already mentioned it. will be very much dependent in 2019 on spot market for transport and for diving. So we will remain to see severe pressure on pricing on that part of our business. That is different, as I mentioned, for Guardline, our survey activities, where we see some further growth prospects. Towage 2019, I already mentioned it. We'll see a reduction of the contribution of the joint ventures there due to the sale of the two joint venture interests we have on the, in the program. I already mentioned the 100 million share buyback program for the remainder of the year. All in all, as an earnings guidance to the market, we have given a guidance that the EBITDA level should remain about stable, but taking into account depreciation, etc., net profit, we think it is going to be a challenge to exceed the level of the net profit, the operational net profit, so corrected for the extraordinary charges, as we achieved that in 2018. CapEx will go up. We expect to be higher at around 265 million, excluding any possible M&A activity. That's it from my part, Martijn. I'll hand over to you.
Thank you very
much. The Q&A.
Thanks, Hans. And with that, operator, I'd like to request you to open the lines for any questions participants may have.
Thank you, sir. And as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, you may press star and one on your telephone, and please wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, you may press the hash key. And we now have your first question from the line of Cecile Mitchell. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much. First, thank you very much for the presentation. It's very detailed, so it's always much appreciated, especially because you have different line of business and so kind of complicated from time to time. My first question will be, so out of the proceeds of 265 million, 100 million will be used for a share buyback. What will be the use of the remaining 165 million from the JV disposal?
That will be improving our net debt position. And we'll use it for that purpose. So it helps us continuing with a very strong balance sheet. We have no other purposes, or contemplating, at least currently. I mean, there may always be opportunities arising down the road, but nothing here for which we intend to use that money. That's also, I'd say, the reason why we have decided to buy back and to use part of the money to buy back shares, because we don't see a purpose for using all of that money for M&A activities or whatsoever. So no particular purpose. It will help us maintain a very solid balance sheet, and you as very relaxed USPP investors in our business.
Okay, thank you very much. My second question is, so you are stepping down as a CFO. Should we expect any change in the financial or overall strategy of the group with Carlo coming in, because he's internal to Boscali? So how should we view the new CFO coming in?
Ah, you should view him as a much younger person than the one leaving, who will no doubt have fresh ideas how to approach certain things, but I think that will be mostly internally driven. I don't think I anything with respect of strategy or financial policy or whatsoever to be expected from the new CFO. As you mentioned, he is an internal candidate, but also the financial policy as we conducting it, it's not so much the policy of the current CFO as of the full board. So in summary, I think I can say that nothing new really you can expect to see from that.
Okay,
he may conduct a presentation differently if he does the half year call with you guys, okay. but that's
okay.
Probably it.
That's useful to know. And maybe one last question. So, looking at some of your peers, it seems that they have started to recover in 2015 in terms of profitability EBITDA versus Boskalis, where the profitability is still down this year. So you have a different mix, product mix, but can you please maybe explain what is driving that and if we should see 2018 really as a trough or, the stabilization in 2019 and after a recovery, or what's your view here?
Well, I think if... And I assume when you mention peers, you mean peers that are active, in particular in the oil and gas sector and in the offshore sector, and not so much
yeah.
our peers in dredging, because I think most of those numbers still have to come out, and I don't think, except for we've seen some numbers from CFE, but I assume again it's primarily in the offshore sector. And I think, yeah, you see some improvement. As I mentioned, we see it with Gardline, and to a larger scale, we've seen it also with the 2018 results of Fugro that have improved substantially. There are some early signs of improving activity in the offshore oil and gas sector. Very early signs. But we see some of that. We are also comfortable that longer term that situation also for us will improve. But as I mentioned at the beginning, we are late cyclical. We have benefited longer than many other players in the industry of the pricing environment of let's say 2012, 13, even to a part 2014. In particular, we've seen that in the heavy marine transport. So the dockwise activities were up till even the early part of 2018. We have benefiting from good contracts that were concluded five years ago, and it'll take us therefore also more time than some of the others now to see some improvement. And then the second part of the question, I think when we made our business plan for the period 2017-2019, we expected we announced it as part of that business plan that we did not anticipate any substantial improvement of the activity levels in the duration of that business plan period, at best somewhere later in 2019. I think looking at today's position, we have gone somewhat deeper as a result of that market, and it probably takes a bit more time also for that recovery for us to really come through. So 2019, as I just said, should be seen in line, and whether that is troughing depends a bit, of course, on what kind of number you're looking in net profit. 2019 may be the trough, as we mentioned. It is a challenge to exceed the level of profitability of 2018. On the other hand, with respect to EBITDA, we anticipate a somewhat more stable level.
So one follow-up question, why EBITDA will be stable and net profit will be down?
Well, stable because, I mean, we're at net profit levels of around 80. So it means that any business, any project, and I mean, we're in a project business. We have settlements of all projects in every year. Let's say a 10 to 15 million result in some business units, improvement or decrease of a result is on an EBITDA level of 350, around that, of course, is not a major difference, but on the bottom line, because that's EBITDA, that's almost goes through the bottom line completely. On a level of profitability of around 80 million, 10 or 15 million, of course, is substantial.
Okay.
That's the most, and why we're saying it is easier if you look at EBITDA. And I think for people like you, probably the EBITDA is far more important than the net profit. EBITDA, we expect to be somewhat stable. But when I say stable at 350, it also means 330, 335 or 350 or 360, 365. That's all within a range of what we would call stable.
Okay. And what in terms of cash flow, in terms of cash flow from operation, do you expect to have similar cash flow levels, weaker, higher?
Well, that depends also on what the development is going to be in working capital. And as I mentioned before, that's one that I always find somewhat difficult because that's so much a point in time and depends on the specific projects that we are running at the end of the year. But in operational terms, I would say, and leaving alone incidental fluctuations in working capital, also around stable compared to 2018. So operational cash flow before CapEx, as I just mentioned, CapEx will be higher than it was in 2018, and also the cash part of the dividend. Last year, we spent some 35 million on the cash part of that dividend. As I mentioned in my presentation, we'll do a full cash dividend that also will result in 2019 in a somewhat higher cash outflow for dividends than we had in 2018.
Okay, thank you very much.
All in all, I think I can say with the revenues from the sale of the harbor towage joint ventures, notwithstanding the buyback of shares and notwithstanding a higher level of CapEx and a higher level of dividend, we should be able to maintain very sound ratios very well within the covenants that we have agreed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And once again, it's star and one if you wish to ask a question. To cancel the request, you may press the hash key. We now have your next question from the line of Ben Vance. Your line is now open.
Hi, and thanks for hosting the call today. I'd like to go back to page 11, if I could, the offshore energy slide. And so looking at EBITDA, are you able to strip out the impact of Gardline from 18 and 17 so we can see what it was like on an apples-to-apples basis?
I think that affects, from the top of my head, 2018 versus 2017 is probably an effect of around 10% on the 2018 number.
Okay, and then you acquired it in August of 17, is that right?
Yes, so it was a couple of million EBITDA contribution we had in 2017. And lower double digits EBITDA contribution in 2000, 18. So the difference between those 2 years, so comparing it apples to apples, is around 10 million. That is the increase in EBITDA through guard line. As I mentioned, it's not so much a consolidation effect on the EBITDA. It is really an increase in EBITDA because the company has been generating relatively low EBITDA even on a full year basis in 2017 as guideline, and has improved its EBITDA level due to higher utilization. Even if I compare full year basis, higher utilization and better pricing.
Okay. So just stepping back then and looking at the services segment, how much of the decline would you say is purely cyclical, and how much of it is secular, that even with an upturn in prices, and crude oil in particular, that because of changes in the offshore market, those revenues are not coming back?
Yeah, I cannot put a specific number on that, but I think we're far away, and we'll see some recovery, as I mentioned. I expect some recovery in that part of the business as order book builds again, in particular for the oil and gas industry, for larger structures as of 2020, probably 2021, and later. So we should see some cyclical recovery there. Also, I doubt that we'll ever get back to pricing levels as we have seen them at the top of the previous cycle.
But are there any trends within the industry that concern you with your customers that decreases the level of activity that they're contracting with you, and that again, back to the previous point, that even at $75 oil, that you may not be able to achieve the same level of revenues, EBITDA, just overall profitability that you had 4 or 5 years ago?
Oh, yes, certainly. I mean, part of that was due that in those years we had still a substantial contribution from the lower end of the fleet that we are in the process of scrapping, hence the impairment on that equipment in the first half of the year. So those vessels won't be there anymore. Won't be contributing. But even if we would have those vessels, that would not come back to that extent, because the most important element there is that we have seen a lot of new competition, in particular from the Far East, and more particular from China. So even when we, and again, no doubt we'll see some recovery in oil and gas, we'll see more heavy competition there from the Far Eastern players, again in particular from the Chinese, and let's say whether we will see demand coming back to the kind of levels that we have seen in the top year is also, so I think, still to be seen. So again, I think we'll see some, and we can be optimistic about some rebuilding of the EBITDA levels in a heavy marine transport, but not back to the kind of levels as we saw in the period, let's say 2013 to 2017.
Great. That's very helpful. Thanks for elaborating, and that's it for me.
Thank you.
Thank you. And your next question is from the line of Cecile Michel. Your line is now open.
Yes, thank you. I have a follow-up question on the offshore energy. So you are saying you are seeing some secular changes in the heavy marine transport segment. Is it possible, again, based on slide 11, to tell us how much of EBITDA was related to this segment, so both the low part and the more premium part in 2017 and 2018, how much was related to heavy marine transport? Because offshore energy is a blend of different activities, but I don't think I have the exact breakdown of this.
No, and we don't provide exact breakdowns. But let's say 2017, there was a substantial contribution in EBITDA terms, so double digit EBITDA country contribution. I'd say higher and double digit, so well in excess of 50-60 million euros, whereas in 2018 that was very substantially smaller, lower double digits.
Okay, thank you.
There are no further questions at this time, sir.
Okay, give you a few more seconds, but if that is all we have for today, I would like to thank all participants for dialing in today. Thank Hans and Dee for joining us for this last time, and we will be circulating the playback afterwards. And as always, if you have any subsequent questions, feel free to reach out and we'll be happy to address those on a one-on-one basis. Thank you very much. And look forward to speaking to you all in August. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.